Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I don't ever want to die alone. Like, yeah. I don't want to die and just be left there. And
I'm gonna cry.
Yeah. And so we go and we pour libation, and sometimes we're literally standing on their blood. So it's important that we understand, like Malcolm says, that you cannot have capitalism without racism. If you're not banking black, that means you are putting your money in banks that actually profit from our oppression. But most of the time, I just believe we can win. I just, you know, and I think it's gonna happen in my lifetime. I'm not doing it just for my kids. I'm doing it for us right now.
This is The Secret Lives of Black Women. I'm Sharla.
And I'm Lauren.
And today we're talking about black liberation and social activism.
Yes, I'm so excited for us to talk about this topic. It is something I'm deeply passionate about. I can't believe that we're just getting to this.
We were going to get to this.
We were going to get to this.
We're building up to it. It's a slow burn. Lauren, you talk about this kind of thing a lot, and I always feel like you are more articulate in speaking about your rage than I am. Have you experienced feelings like this of being oppressed? And what have been your experiences with activism or just feeling like oppressed in this country?
I don't think that I am very articulate in my rage or my speech about my thoughts on this, because I'm not, you know, I've not studied it and I'm not a scholar, but I have participated in, you know, a lot of like a protest. I wish that I was far more involved in, you know, protest and liberation movements on a daily basis. But I don't know. For me, I feel like I'm doing the bare minimum for something that I'm so deeply passionate about and just am frustrated about as a black woman that exists in this world, that exists in this industry. I feel like we both work in the entertainment industry. And for me, it's like, I just feel that, like, I'm like, how do I even, like, articulate all of my anger and rage, and that, like, the black experience is not adequately shown, and it's shown through, like, a lens and a gaze of whiteness, and how do we, like, overcome that to, like, free ourselves, and we exist in a system and we work in a system that is literally its function. You know, that sense of freedom to, like, be a black person and go out in the world and just do what you fucking want. Do what feels good and not have, like, the gaze or the lens of, like, how this is perceived. Like, I feel so trapped and I just want to be free, and it makes me angry.
Yeah. My frustration is always, how do you gain freedom without completely tearing it down? Because if the only way to gain freedom is to operate within a racist structure, then is it real freedom?
Yeah,
I don't know what it is.
You have to tear it down. And for me, it's the thing that I, you know, we live our lives and is the function of our lives in order to, I think, create this space of, like, liberation. But how do we do that when we're so tied to the function of capitalism?
Yeah.
Like, I still like nice things.
Yeah.
The way that the system is built is, in order for you to have nice things, someone is not.
Yeah.
And it's like, you have to be willing to give up those trappings in order to create a space so that everyone can exist and thrive. And it's
Well, the thing about America is that it's co-opted nice things as something that is only a function of capitalism when it's not. You know, like everyone can enjoy nice things. And how much is enough? That's a question that I've been asking myself a lot. It's like America is the kind of place that makes you feel like a lot is not enough. And this to me is where the degradation of society really lies, where like we are looking to have everything. We're looking to have what celebrities have. We're looking to have this ideal life that is absolutely unrealistic and not real and batshit crazy, because in order for it to exist, at least in the way that it exists in America, it does rely on someone being stomped on.
And once you hit that bar is the not enough.
Yeah.
Right? So the concept of enough is a fallacy if it's constantly moving.
Right.
You know?
And Hollywood is the place for never feeling fulfilled, even if you have everything. It's the kind of place where...
It's the kind of place where it's like, this is the frustrating thing about the place that we work, is that being Black is then co-opted to feed a white liberal need of feeling like of their guilt.
Yeah.
Of feeling like I feel bad. So let's prop up these Black voices.
Yeah.
But let's take all the things that make them true and unique away from them so that it's a Black voice, but it's a Black voice that is still palatable to a white audience.
Yeah.
Then what is the point?
But even when it's like painful, even when it's hard to watch and it still calls out white people, it's still like made by white people, which makes me feel awful.
And it's painful how? It's painful how? But is it painful because it's showcasing our trauma? Where are the celebration of like our joy, of our triumphs, told through like Black people and a Black lens and their own voice?
And owned by Black people. And not just making money for white people and at the discretion of white people.
You know, and this is a frustration that I have, is that in the paradigm of this system in which we exist in order to reach that level of success, you're always going to hit that barometer where your success lies or is determined by like white money.
Right.
By money. Yeah. And it's just like, It's frustrating. I mean, it makes me think of, you know, and that's just through my own through my own lens of just like work right now. And I'm, you know.
Well, we have the perfect guest to talk about this.
Yes.
Today's guest is Dr. Melina Abdullah. She is a recognized expert on race, gender, class, and social movements. She was among the original group of organizers that convened to form Black Lives Matter and continues to serve as a Los Angeles chapter leader.
She's also professor and chair of Pan-African Studies at the California State University, Los Angeles. She's from Oakland and has written several books, chapters, and articles on subjects ranging from the coalition building to womanist mothering. I want to talk to her about so many things first. Let's just get started.
Let's get started. Let's talk to Dr. Melina Abdullah.
First, want to start with saying that I love that you've got on your Oakland Black Panther shirt here in the studio, and you're from Oakland, and I want to start with just learning a little bit more about you and how you got involved in political activist movements, particularly around like Black liberation.
Sure. Well, I'm from Oakland, born in the 70s, even though I'm 29, so don't let the math fool you. But Oakland in the 70s, you basically were born into movement, right? So I'm the Panther Cub generation. My parents weren't Panthers, but they did contribute to a lot of the survival programs. That's what Oakland was like in the 70s. And so there is no moment I often ask my students, like, when did they step into activism? And some people ask me the same question you asked me, but there is no moment. I was kind of born into it, and remember being on the picket lines at 3 and 4 years old with my dad, who was a carpenter, and involved in the union. So I've always been active. I think the moment of kind of being formally kind of entrenched in movement really came with the birth of Black Lives Matter. But I had always been active leading up to that.
What happened when Black Lives Matter started that got you entrenched?
Well, I was never what people would call a joiner, right? So I was always involved in demonstrations and protests, but I was kind of like an anonymous face.
I think most of us are like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to come to every protest. I'm going to speak up. I'm going to, you know, I really believed in kind of liberation work in the classroom. I did a lot of community organizing on campuses, a lot around ethnic studies, did a lot of work even in high school. I remember protesting and we started a picket outside there. But that's not like a being a member of an organization. And so what happened with Black Lives Matter is it was really kind of just birthed organically. And so a lot of us in Los Angeles especially poured out into the streets after Zimmerman was acquitted in the murder of Trayvon Martin. And we demonstrated for, you know, days. And then finally, I got a text that originated with Patrice Cullors, who I was in a Black community organizers collective with. And it came through a Black independent journalist named Tonda Sizwe Chimurenga. And it said, meet at 9 p.m. at St. Elmo's Village, which is like this Black artist community here. And so I went, but again, it just felt very organic. And I went and I had my students and other mamas in the streets with me. And we all, about 15 of us, went to that meeting. And we didn't know that it was going to be what we pledged that night, in the middle of the night, in the moonlight, because St. Elmo's Village is kind of built like an African village, is to build a movement, not a moment. And it sounded great, and we were committed to that, but we didn't know we were kind of giving birth to this global movement to become, you know, kind of an internationally known movement, right? Mm-hmm. It was after the, not after the death of Trayvon Martin, was it kind of, had it caught on? It didn't catch on until after the murder of Mike Brown in Ferguson. Mm-hmm.
I remember when Black Lives Matter was starting to grow as a movement, one of the frustrations that I had was watching white organizations not speak up and link arms and say, yeah, Black Lives Matter. It was almost like, I mean, to me, it was like a slur almost, like for white people to yeah. say Black Lives Matter. Like,
it was how
they had
dare
to
you
jump,
say
exactly.
Black.
They had to like jump on Blue Lives Matter. And I'm okay. just like, just say Black well, Lives right. Matter.
Right.
It's fear, I think, of centering the Black experience and saying that, like, what is wrong with saying Black? Like, I feel like we encroach a lot of things under diversity or POC yeah. instead of saying Black. And what's the fear of being like, it's Black. Black yeah. Lives Matter. We're not right. saying that, like, no one else's lives right. matter, but fuck, can we center ourselves? And whenever we center ourselves as a people, and people get up in arms.
Here.
Yeah, right. you can cuss on
oh,
here.
Oh, yeah,
you
can do it.
You be you. Oh, you be yeah. No, this is the Secret Lives of Black Women, and on this show, okay. this is a space
for
us.
Have no filter.
So that is it.
Okay.
But that is one of the things that frustrated me so much, was even in this movement, even in a time of so much pain, which is often the case, still you have to censor yourself. And Black is this very political word.
Right.
Just the word itself
right.
is political.
Right. And I mean, it's also, you know, a form, when we talk about white supremacy, it's really important that we understand that white supremacy is tethered to anti-Blackness,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so as we talk about racism and the way that racism plays out in this country, everything begins with the dehumanization of Black people.
Mm-hmm.
And so they want to talk about, you know, these kind of broad terms. It's why they try to force us under this people of color umbrella, which, you know, there is a place for solidarity, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we have to be able to talk about the specific ways in which Black people are oppressed, right? So when we started talking about Black Lives Matter and saying Black Lives Matter, it was offensive to not only white people, but other people of color.
Absolutely.
Were like, well, you know, it's not just Black people killed by mm-hmm. police. No, it's not, but it's mostly.
It's a lot.
It's mostly.
Lot. And so we need to remember that police come from slave catchers who put targets on Black people's backs,
mm-hmm.
right? And so if we think about that, if we start, and it's not a threat to anybody else.
It's not.
No.
If you work to liberate Black people, once Black people get free, everybody gets free.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's in their best interest to do that unless they're wedded to the system of white supremacy.
And I mean, that just makes me think of so many things. It's just like being wedded to the system of white supremacy and this whole idea of like a seat at the table and who gets a seat and whose proximity to whiteness, even as this blanket term, people of color. Well, who has a closer proximity to whiteness? And when you use those blanket terms, it forces people not to check their own anti-Blackness.
Right.
And when they don't check their anti-Blackness, then the system just keeps thriving.
That's
you know,
right.
Because it's like it's a distraction from being like, well, we cannot look at this. We can blanket it. We can say things are better.
Right.
You know, we're all, because I do believe in solidarity, but I do believe in like a movement for Black liberation. And I think, you know, when we don't solely focus on that, we put a cover so that the systems of white supremacy can still continue to thrive. But people think that we're progressing forward and right. Really nothing's happening.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a real clear illustration of what you're saying. So yesterday, I went to the attorney general's office to meet with some senior folks. The California attorney general, his name is Javier Becerra. And I went with the mother of a brother named David Josiah Lawson, who was killed by a white supremacist way up in Northern California in a place called Humboldt County. He was stabbed to death. And because it's a small town and it's fairly isolated, the white supremacist killer named Kyle Zollner was protected by really every institution in that town, primarily the district attorney, who made sure that she represented him instead of the victim in the case, David Josiah Lawson, who was a 19-year-old Black male honor student at Humboldt State University. So I went with his mom to meet with the staff of the attorney general's office, these senior staff members who were both white. One of the policy director was a white woman, and she had on her Black suit, and she had on an ethnic, right? They like to use that term, an ethnic necklace, right? Which just means not European, but had some beads on it, right? And so we're sitting there, and the first thing that they say is, I'm sorry, I can't help you with your case. So they took months and then said, basically, they're not going to do anything to intervene in this case. And we could get into how fucked up this case is. Like, this boy who did everything right, not that you should have to be perfect, right?
But they give us this idea of the perfect victim.
Right.
You know?
This is the perfect victim and nobody's fighting for him except Black people. And what is said is basically that there's no sense in calling on a system to represent the interests of Black people, that they have not done that. They haven't ever done it. And then she holds up, this white policy director holds up and says, so I said, well, this is white supremacy, because if the victim had been white and the killer had been Black, he'd be locked up right now. And she said, I take offense to that. Because Javier Becerra is the first Hispanic attorney general. So when we talk about the idea of anti-Blackness and the problem with this overarching people of color umbrella, I think that encapsulates it, right?
Absolutely.
That in some way by electing us, quote unquote, and I hope Javier Becerra is offended by the fact that this white woman called him Hispanic,
yeah.
Which is an oppressive term in and of itself, right? But the idea that the tokenization of a quote-unquote Hispanic attorney general means something for Black liberation is hugely problematic.
I love that you are bringing up the system, which is something that Lauren and I talk a lot about. And one of the things that I've talked about on this podcast before is the idea that the only way that I think Black people are going to have any kind of liberation is if we have some sort of financial power, you know, like the more, like I really believe in educating, like financial education for Black people, building Black wealth, because that is the system that we are in. And even Lauren and I were having a conversation about, can we beat a system from within or do we have to destroy it? Like you tweeted, about, you tweeted a video of Angela Davis talking about capitalism. Is it okay if I play the video?
Sure.
And I feel that if we're going to talk about the total liberation of Black people, we first have to liberate ourselves from the material conditions of our oppression. And the material conditions of our oppression are no jobs, are bad jobs, unemployment, bad housing, bad medical care, and all of the kinds of things that will be eradicated under socialism.
I believe in socialism. I believe that it is one of the few avenues we have to structurally change America in a good way for all people, but in particular to really bring about any kind of sense of reparations for what this country has done to Black people. Can you speak on your beliefs about socialism, or I don't know how to phrase this question, but can you talk about this?
Economic agenda for Black people? So I absolutely agree that we are never going to get free under a capitalist system.
Yeah.
I don't believe in replacing white capitalism with Black capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, that it's important that we understand the power of collective resources. If we think about, and I think even from our arrival here in this country, right, if you think about Black mutual aid societies, the original purposes of Black fraternities and sororities, the role of Black churches, the AME church in particular, it was about pooling Black resources so that we could collectively benefit from them. And so in Black Lives Matter in 2014, we launched something called Black Xmas, recognizing the role that white capitalism plays in the oppression and the state violence experienced by Black people. And what brought it on was the murder of John Crawford inside a Walmart store, right? And people will remember this was in Beaverton, Ohio. He picked up Walmart merchandise, which was like a BB gun, right? And he was just walking around the store talking on the phone like everybody else was doing in Walmart. I imagine I've never been in a Walmart.
Good for you.
Yeah. But he's walking around Walmart and someone calls police on him. They murder him in a span of seconds.
And Ohio an open carry state?
It is an open carry state. And it wasn't even a gun.
Yes.
Right. So there's that. And so, you know, this happens. But then you also think about the murder of Yvette Henderson in Oakland, who was accused of shoplifting at Home Depot. Police are called on her for shoplifting and they kill her in the parking lot. You think about here in Los Angeles, two Black men back to back being killed in 24-hour fitness. They were both gym members and they made the non-Black workers uncomfortable with their presence. 24-hour fitness doesn't change their policy or even issue an apology. And then in 2018, they kill Albert Ramon Dorsey. So there's this role that corporations play in the murder of Black people. And, you know, of course, we could also take that back to chattel slavery and the ways in which Black people have been killed. So it's important that we understand, like Malcolm says, that you cannot have capitalism without racism. And so there has to be an economic agenda for Black people. So in 2014, we started something called Black Xmas, where at least for this period, from what they call Black Friday to January 1st, we want Black people and all people to be intentional about where their dollars go. So we ask everybody to divest every single penny from white capitalism, right? So don't spend money at Walmart, for sure. You should never spend money at Walmart, but don't spend money with the white corporations that actually profit from Black oppression. Instead, we have kind of a three-point program, Build Black. So don't be consumers if you don't have to. Instead of buying me something, donate to blank, and you can write in which organization. And there's everything from organizations like mine, Black Lives Matter, to the Fernando Pullum Center, which offers free arts and music programs for Black kids in Leimert Park, right? Think about what we call building Black, investing those dollars in Black-led organizations. And then the second thing is buying Black. And so this is what you're asking about. Buying Black is important, and it's important that when we think about Black businesses, that we also support Black businesses that do something for Black communities. So it's not just about lining the pockets of Black entrepreneurs. It's also about a consciousness that we have among kind of Black business owners, where they're also working to contribute to Black community. Esowan Books, right, opening up the bookstore and having readings and discussions with Black authors who are well-known, like Ta-Nehisi Coates, but also not well-known, like unpublished or self-published authors. So that's Buy Black. And then finally, the third point is Banking Black. And we got a lot of heat when we pushed the Bank Black movement, because they were like, it's capitalism. It's Black capitalism that you're pushing. We talked with, you know, all of our mentors. And one of the things that we adopted, which is actually a Black power principle, is survival pending revolution. What you gonna do with your money? You don't have cash stuffed under your mattress, you know? Yeah. So if you're not banking Black, that means you are putting your money in banks that actually profit from our oppression. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Citibank, all of these big banks, Chase, they made money off the slave trade, right? They also finance things like the Dakota Access Pipeline, like private prisons. So you're actually giving them the capital to oppress us. Why not give your money to One United Bank, which actually sets up trust funds for the children of those killed by police? Not saying that it's perfect, but it's a better system. So anyway, that's a long answer to an economic agenda. We believe that the ultimate answer to this is really dismantling capitalism and thinking about what Kwame Ture and others talked about, which is African scientific socialism, right? So not, some people are Marxists, right? We believe that you can have spirituality and socialism. Spirituality and socialism are actually really They go together.
They do. They're very intertwined.
Yeah.
Well, we really want to talk more about the personal aspect of your socialism and activism, and we'll do that after this break.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.
And we're back. Lauren really has a question she wants to ask you.
Yeah, I mean, I have one, which is something that I struggle with a lot, is how do you maintain a sense of hope and change when we look at the systems and the power structures that are built to keep us down, right? And they seem at times insurmountable, right? And it's just like, what do you do personally to keep the fight going within yourself and being like, this is possible? Like, maybe I won't see Black liberation in my lifetime, but maybe my kids will.
So there's moments, very few and far between, where it doesn't seem like we can win, you know? But most of the time, I just believe we can win. I just, you know, and I think it's going to happen in my lifetime. I'm not doing it just for my kids. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it for us right now. Like, I think that we don't spend enough time focusing on the victories, mm-hmm. right? And thinking about, like, okay, so Black Lives Matter, you asked about it, right? So we come out into the streets for a couple of days. We get in a circle in a Black artist community. And then all of a sudden, a year later, it's like a global movement. That shit is a victory, yes. right? Do you remember in 2013 when we could not say Black, right? Mm-hmm. When we talked about this, when you said Black, people would go, oh, that's racist,
yeah.
right? Now, we're expected to be able to say a Black agenda is, right? Mm-hmm. And if we don't do that, then you're really kind of a sellout, right? So we have all of these victories. You know what gives me the greatest hope? And then I'll get to a few practices that I have. Are you watching these kids? Like the kids, I mean like 21 and under, I mean like 15. And they believe anything is possible. And they call people out and they fully expect people to respond to them. They like Julian Castro. They hit me to Julian yeah. Castro, right? I wasn't even up on him. And they were like, my daughter was like, Mama, you got to pay attention to what he's saying. So I started paying attention. Like Julian sitting up, he got his opening quote on his website is like by Audre Lorde.
Yeah. No, he's really, he gets it. He gets it.
Yep.
I've been following him. Yeah. I think he's, I think he's overlooked and exposed.
Right.
You know, like I'm personally very frustrated with the attention that Buttigieg is getting, especially with his record and his lack of information about the Black community. I have a lot of frustrations with the white gay organizations and their lack of support for Black people and Black lives, because I feel like I watch Black people and Black organizations stand up for gay lives all the time. And when I'm talking about this particularly, I'm talking about like white gay males.
Right.
Like they only take help, but they don't give it. And I feel like Buttigieg is an example of this. And it's really frustrating to watch.
And you watch them ignore any race, Black, queer, and trans folks.
Absolutely.
So you're absolutely yep. right. It's yep. a white gay agenda,
yes.
a white male gay agenda.
Yes. Not, their privilege is in being white males. And
right.
like the gay part is just an afterthought. And
right.
that's why they're being elevated. And I'm just like, but what about the Black people that got you here, that got you to be able to be out like this? And you ignore them and you erase
right.
them. And it makes
even
me
that
mad.
Town hall shit they had yeah. that they called, what did they call it? Like the
Fox
equality
News one?
Equality town
News.
Hall. No, it was
okay.
like on CNN. It was mm-hmm. like the equality town hall, but it was about just like a single access framework on LGBTQ, right? And so they didn't even have, there was a Black trans woman had to stand up and say, what about Black trans women? But also the concept of equality, how did that become, you know, meaning LGBTQ and not racism
yeah,
and not
right,
sexism
right.
and not classism, right?
Well, to me, this is a function of white supremacy.
It's a function of white supremacy,
yeah.
and it's a function of white supremacy that's even embedded in, like, the feminist movement.
Yes,
because
right,
it's
exactly.
a separation of being like, but you can be, well, you're Black, they're Black women too.
Yeah.
Right.
So how do you can't take race out of this system,
yes.
out of the equation, and think that things are going to be okay if you uplift a whole group and you remove Black people from it
what
with intentionality.
Doing, yeah, right. what they're doing is they're taking the oppressions that they can hide, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And
he did hide. Buttigieg,
yeah.
he just came out.
Yes.
Right.
And co-opting
mm-hmm.
them and ignoring and erasing the Black people that put these issues in the forefront. It
because
is
by,
maddening.
Because by
it
just focusing on that, that's like the one thing that's removing you from experiencing the full onslaught of like white supremacy
exactly.
that you can benefit from. So it's like, how can I just like, you know, move myself more to get that full experience, and it's not caring about other people that
yeah.
are
right.
fucking victims of it
right, right.
constantly, you know?
Yeah. Mm.
But I would love to, I want your steps of, you
okay.
mentioned that you have.
So yeah, the kids give me hope. The kids, mm-hmm. you know, the audacity of saying presidential candidates got to respond to our issues. The audacity of saying, yeah, this is a a forum on gun violence, and we want to talk about how police violence is gun violence, right? The willingness. So if you think about, I'm watching my daughter, right, in this space. So she, my two daughters are co-founders of the Black Lives Matter Youth Vanguard, right? So my oldest is really entrenched in this whole, what is their generation, Z? Gen Q? Z?
I think they're Z.
I think they're Gen Z. So she's really entrenched in this whole Gen Z organizing, right? So these Parkland kids found mm-hmm. March for Our Lives, and most of them are white and affluent. And the black kids challenged them. But here's the difference between their generation and mine and yours, right? Is the white kids responded. The white kids were like, you know what, you're right. So you watched like David Hogg, right, mm-hmm. who has every white male privilege in the world, now pledge he's never going to get on stage without a black woman,
nice.
Right? And so this generation, and I'm not saying he's perfect, but I know the white kids when I was in high school mm-hmm. would never do shit like that,
yeah.
right? I love the audacity of these kids. So these kids, when you say, how do you, like, keep yourself going? I watch them because they believe anything is possible and it's going to happen tomorrow, right? The other thing that I do, like, in the moments, which are few and far between for me, is, you know, we don't talk about it enough, I think, as Black people, but I have a spiritual practice. And I think that, you know, there's some good stuff about solidarity, but I think what happened beginning with my generation is kind of almost a shaming of our indigenous practices, right? Where Black people thought it was, you know, unintelligent to say hallelujah, right? Like, do you know how we ended colonialism on the continent? It's through our spiritual practice. So you know what we shouldn't do is let them dupe us into thinking we don't need to pray, that we shouldn't talk to our ancestors, that we should act like, you know, the whispers that I hear. And now I'm going to sound crazy to white folks, I'm sure. But
that's okay.
But in the shower, I hear my ancestors and my God talking to me and telling me to do this and do that. And it's clear. I know what it is, right? And so part of what gets me through is hearing that and saying, this is the voice of, like, one of the things we need to think about, even especially with Black Lives Matter, when we go out, we try to go out as soon as someone is killed.
Mm-hmm.
And we pour libation for that person, right? Because their bodies are stolen, but their spirits are present, right? And we don't want them, like, even if you just think about yourself personally, I don't ever want to die alone. Like, yeah. I don't want to die and just be left there. And
I'm gonna cry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we go and we pour libation, and sometimes we're literally standing on their blood. So how can you not have a spiritual practice?
Dr. Abdullah, we've talked about some heavy things.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know, what's the lighter side of your life?
I laugh every fucking day.
What, like, are you laughing at right now?
I have three kids.
Oh, they're funny.
Oh, they're hilarious. Kids are funny. So my youngest is a boy. He's fourth grade. He had a girlfriend in the first and second grade, and now they're broken up. And
long
I find
term.
It yes. hilarious because I said, whatever happened to her? And he said, she's in a different classroom.
Long distance relationships don't
That's
work.
What he said. Yeah. He said, everybody knows a long distance relationship will never work. I find that shit hilarious.
Oh my God.
So my kids be having me rolling. I watch stand-up comedy almost every day. I like that. What's his name? Rel?
Yeah.
Rel Howery?
Lil Rel Howery?
Yeah. Lil Rel, yeah.
Yeah.
So I just watched his stand-up. That was hilarious. And I then make fun of the stand-up. Like, why are Black people who are not from L.A. calling it in Crenshaw instead of on Crenshaw? Like, I don't understand what in Crenshaw, what are you in?
That actually right? doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make sense at all.
I don't right. know if that's like a, I think that's just like a grammar thing. I don't know if it's just like non-LA people.
It's ongoing.
Is
they
it?
Keep calling it in Crenshaw. I think they
Do
got
they
confused.
Do they think Crenshaw is a place and not a street?
I think when Nipsey got killed.
I see.
And we started talking about in the Crenshaw district.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they started thinking it mean you're supposed to say in Crenshaw.
Well,
so that shit
up,
is
guys.
Funny.
If you're saying in Crenshaw,
you're wrong.
Crenshaw does not like it. You're wrong. We like to end every episode asking our guest, what is your secret to life, to thriving, to being you?
That's a hard-ass question. My secret is, one of my secrets is submission to the will of God. And working to honor my ancestors and make my mama proud.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. What a pleasure it's been to have you on today.
Thank you so much for coming and speaking with us.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So Lauren and I just talked to Dr. Malina Abdullah. I've been saying Abdullah the whole time, like someone who can't read. But this is not about my lack of a pronunciation ability. This is about one of the dopest interviews we've possibly ever had. These keep getting better and better. I'm blessed.
I'm so in awe of Black women.
Yeah,
and just
same.
The work that they do, their presence. And she, I mean, I'm just feeling really like impacted by her and her words of hope. Like, I'm going to be honest, today is like a really rough day for me, and like feeling like is there a way out or up out of this shit? And I feel so much better. I feel I have more hope through this conversation. And it was just like a reminder for me that when I lose my sense of hope or that things can change, they win.
Yeah.
And I need to always remember to keep that in mind.
Absolutely.
You know?
I really loved a lot of the things she said, but one of the great things she said was her secret. I loved her secret.
I loved her secret. That's my word of the week. I totally stole your thing where you're like, I always, my secret's always the last thing I hear.
Because it's usually the most impactful thing, you know? Because that's the point of that question, you know? And submission, right, is interesting to me because the word itself implies weakness, I think. But what I've learned over the year, especially as you know, Lauren, I deal with so much anxiety. I'm a very anxious person. Mm-hmm. And so much of the training that I've gotten from meditation is a sort of submission. It is a sort of acceptance. And submission and acceptance are not the same thing, but I think they're cousins.
I think they're cousins. And for me, her whole word spoke to me as a person who does have a deep spiritual practice. Like, I pray in the morning and I pray at night. And her whole thing of, like, submission to the will of God and working to hear my ancestors are, like, two big things that I try to focus in my life. So it's just, like, remember to, like, when you feel like you can't just get through, just to get still and let them talk to you and listen. And, like, let my ancestors be, like, my guides.
I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the pod before, and if I have, forgive me, guys, but one of the conversations that we had, you know, that fateful meeting, that reuniting that we had when we had dinner and we talked about working together, one of the things, I was in a very dark place as usual, like as a Black woman in the world. I was in a dark place. I was like feeling very I'm at my wit's end. I don't know how to get to the next level. And one of the things that you said to me was stand on the shoulders of the ancestors. You said something like that, like you're not alone. You reminded me that I've come so far. And that was one of the things that I loved that Dr. Abdullah talked about was let's think about the great things we've done and how far we've come.
And how far we've come. Like the fact that we exist. Like, when you think of just you as a Black person,
yes,
and chattel, for me as a Black American, chattel slavery and the things that my ancestors had to persevere through so that I can sit here and breathe,
yeah,
is like, how dare I have the audacity to sit and feel hopeless?
Yeah.
And like, this conversation and the remembrance of, you know, my people who send me signs all the time is just a reminder to be like, nothing will defeat you because you are guided.
Absolutely.
You know?
Well,
yeah.
My word of the week, you know what it is. It's submission. I think right now the world is calling on us to give. That's what, give of our time, give of our energy, give of our resources. And I've been kind of ignoring that call for a little while, you know, and I think this is a great time to recommit myself to submit to the collective, to the greater sense of we're all in this together, to the call to stand up and speak out, as it seems like Black women constantly are. But hey, if that's what I'm here for, and I'm gonna do it.
Yes.
Our cups runneth over.
Our cups truly runneth over. And
we hope this pod helps your cup.
Yeah.
Fill your cup.
Helps fill your cup. And hopefully this has given you some inspiration to like not let motherfuckers get you down and
yeah,
keep fighting and be informed and grow.
Absolutely.
And that is something that I am just internally thankful and feel blessed for. This
Make
unknown
sure to,
community of women.
Yeah. You know? Make sure to check out blackxmas.org, as mentioned by Dr. Abdullah, and maybe consider switching to a Black bank.
There's so many things to do, and just thank you guys so much, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. That's a wrap for season
That's
two,
That's a wrap
right?
on season two.
Fuck y'all.
We are on hiatus, but we will be back so soon. And in the meantime, where can people find us?
They can follow us at the SLBW on Instagram and Twitter. So do it.
Do it. Stay checking out those things for posts and updates about our triumphant return. And we can't wait to talk to you soon.
We are your hosts, Sharla Lauriston
and Lauren Domino.
The Secret Lives of Black Women is a production of Stitcher.
Our producer is Stephanie Kariuki.
Our editor is Gianna Palmer.
The show is recorded and mixed by Andy Christens.
Special thanks to our chief content officer, Chris Bannon, and to Brendan Burns, who made our theme music.
Make sure you follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the SLBW. See you later.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.